Hi and hello, Watch fans, and welcome to another edition of The Real Time Show with me, your friendly neighborhood watchmaker, Rob Nuts, and my co-host calling in all the way from Amsterdam, Alan Ben-Joseph. Today, we are joined by one of our favorite people in the industry, Chapex CEO, Javier de Rocamorel. How are you, my friend?
I'm okay, but I'm absolutely incapable to speak as fast as you do after my accident this year. So I hope people will accept to have a normal speed and not the extraordinary one that you are having.
Well, to be quite frank, I need to slow down myself because I do have a tendency to speak a little bit quickly when I get excited. And of course, I'm excited because, as I said, you are one of my favorite people in the industry. And it's a great pleasure that you joined us today.
Same for me.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice.
We love each other and it's great. And what we have been doing so far has been incredible. So it's a real pleasure to be, at different seats around the same table and sharing the same passion, which could be sharing the same meal, which could be otology. Our passion for ology, so that's a great thing.
It really is. Now, I've always felt very blessed to count you among my closest friends in the industry. And I've been following Chapex ever since you re-established the name in watchmaking. For those of our listeners who don't know the backstory of your career, would you mind filling us in on who you are, where you came from, and how you ended up leading this modern day success story?
I just always loved the idea of creating a product for someone, if possible, tailored to him and to sell it, you know, and to do it for the person and have the smile on the face of the person. So that started quite early when I fell in love of snowboarding. I made my first snowboards in my garage, and I actually did made some for some other activists and fans of snowboarding. That was 40 years ago. So the snowboard we were making were looking more like doors of a room than snowboards today, but they're still possible to surf with them. It was fun, and I was 14. But I think that's when the virus caught me for creating a product, you know, from scratch. And then I had a career that was in big groups with initially simple products, you know, Mars bars, Mars ice cream, cosmetics, makeup, which was really fun, actually. It's really fun to work in makeup. And I went back to school in Spain, in a great school called IESE in Barcelona. And that gave a sort of a second breathe or a more helicopter view on business. And then I worked for Loewe in accessories, leather accessories. I had many different jobs, but the last one and the nicest one was product manager, and which is actually back to what I loved. So creating a product for customers and seeing the smile on their face when they buy it in the store, that was really great. I was in Spain, in Madrid then. Moved to a fashion industry to fine clothing, actually, with Zegna. Worked more in the marketing part. And then, well, as it happens for many people, I had a hiccup in my career, a big hiccup or a serial of hiccups, because I suddenly realized that my time with Zegna was over and I needed to go somewhere else. I was looking actually a little bit outside. So that was a conjunction of planet that was quite interesting. And I started working for eBay, but I was given two functions. You know, one was to revamp eBay for the first time, and the second one was to be a fuse. I perfectly did the second job, so I fused after a year and not even a year and a half, because they restructured again and changed strategy, and I realized that you don't join the industry in an easy jump. You know, it was a very difficult jump. You know, changing location, job, and industry was probably unmakeable. So after that, I looked for a job. I found a third job in the industry, in Autorologerie. I won't say the name of the brand because I stayed there for a week, you know. That was actually probably the most depressing experience in my professional life. But that was also showing me that in the watchmaking culture, also in Autorologerie, there is a lot to say, a lot to discover, and a lot to change. And hopefully this happened to me, because today I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful because it's thanks to that chaotic parkour that now I could restart Chapex. And it's thanks to these experiences that stayed in my brain as this. I never want to do it if I do a company. Or I never want people to leave that if they are in a company that I lead. And so it was a good experience. Also working, we can come back to on that later, but working in different industries has been very, very good for me, for the way I approached watchmaking and the way to resolve things and to do things. Of course, I come with a weakness compared to someone who has been a trained, skilled watchmaker who started at the age of 14, but I have other, let's say, qualities or competencies or experiences that help in making Chapex what it is today. So it's always, you know, you never have everything and you have to be happy with what you have.
exactly which qualities that you took with you from your previous careers do you think have been helpful in guiding ChapEc?
Okay, so at Mars, I think the structure, the art of putting a plan that would be very complex into a one page, just it, you know, very clear. At L'Oréal, the creativity, the way that you can bring people behind you by telling the story. So it's about storytelling, narrative, beautiful product, beauty, probably, maybe beauty is another, that was the starting point of the quest of beauty, you know. L'Oréal was really more the fact that you can be as a product manager, a real little CEO with no direct reports, but a lot of people working with you and for you, and you have to make the beautiful product that is going to make the goosebumps on the customer arm. And I also worked a lot about pricing. That was interesting to see how many things were logical and then illogical, you know? The first discovery of applications of the Veblen theory, for example. At Zegna, I would say that was more the vision of a brand and how a luxury brand needs to behave to its customers. It was another thing at Zegna also in production to make a bespoke suit in 3 weeks and to see how much that question of organization, method, timing was critical to success. So how you could see that the customer was capable to wait for a certain period of time and no more, and how to manage everything around that. So the first bespoke watches we were making, that was more personalized than bespoke, I would say. We were making them in 3 weeks. So same thing, you know. I just adapted that from Zegna to ChapEc. And the idea of creating somehow the sensation of belonging to a family when you're a brand and to welcome people there. So that was a bit of what I learned. Well, at Ebel, what I learned was I knew nothing about watchmaking, but I really want to make a higher level watchmaking. I would say... And the last one, yeah, was more culture, probably company culture.
Well, considering that you came from a completely different background and didn't know anything about watchmaking, you now know a great deal, having been in the industry for almost a decade now, I suppose. For those of our listeners that don't know so much about the man behind ChapEc, and I mean ChapEc himself, could you tell us a little bit about his personal story and why it was so inspirational to you?
ChapEc is one of the last watchmakers that was totally forgotten. And that was one of the reasons why we decided to revive him, you know, because we felt he deserved it. But when we started, we had very little information. After I had the chance to get in touch with Pierre-Yves Donzé, who lives in Osaka and is today a famous historian. He was then starting to be famous historian, and not as famous as today in the watchmaking world. And we became very close friends, and we loved it. So now we know about the story of ChapEc. But at the beginning, we knew three things, you know. We knew that he had started a company first with a guy named Moreau, and after with another guy named Antoine Norbert de Patek, and that they created Patek, ChapEc & Company that later would change his name to a very famous company that everybody knows today. And we knew that when they part away, he would create his own company called ChapEc & Company. So that was the third company that he made in his career, and that with his company that he became the watchmaker of Napoleon III, and that he opened a boutique for making and selling watches in Place Vendôme, and that he would write a book on watchmaking, which was the first or the second book on watchmaking ever written in Polish. So that was really the bits and pieces we had. After that, we analyzed much more, and what we understood that in this period of time, he was appreciated for a certain vision of beauty, a certain quest for beauty, where there is a certain distance to the watch and you feel it's classical, but not completely. And the closer you get, the more you see that it's finally not so classical, actually very original. But you still remain in something that is not going to be extravagant. And that was our cahier des charges for recreating the ChapEc watches, which was this quest of beauty with an idea that we would rewrite beauty as of today, you know, keeping his personality and his style, but modernizing it a lot. And at the same time, respectful of certain ideas that we would be more elegant than extravagant.
Xavier, thank you so much for sharing your personal story and also ChapEc's story. I've been following you from day one. I had the honor to meet you actually when you kicked off. And now that you're a very successful brand and CEO, I can confirm that you're as nice, friendly, and fun as you were at day one. I want to congratulate you guys on the amazing success that you had the 8 years plus, because if I remember correctly, it's almost 9 years that you started.
Well, we started working end of 2013. So effectively, it's 9 years, but we were not visible. We became visible in 2015.
And the brand is founded in Croix des Berges in 1845.
Mm-hmm.
What I loved when I met you the first time and when you told me about the brand, which I had to admit, I didn't know it either, and the amazing link with another famous brand. I love the fact that you guys entered the watch market almost a decade ago with the idea of offering true personalization. A lot was possible. It wasn't really crowdfunding, right? What you guys did.
It's called crowdfunding equity. So it means that you get funding from the crowd, but regarding your equity, your share capital, you're selling your company rather than selling products, which is a classic system of crowdfunding.
So you guys did that and you gave the option to also personalize a lot in the first watch you guys developed, which was called Croix des Berges, which was where François Chapek founded the company in 1845, correct?
We don't know exactly. It was in Geneva. What we know is that he was working on Quai des Berges number 29. And then later on, in 1847, we know that he is in Rue du Rhône. But we didn't want it to use the Rue du Rhône to avoid a move that wouldn't have been a smart move. It could have been misinterpreted. So the Quai des Berges was not related to anyone. And because we don't know exactly which date he changed this location, we kept it. It was okay. So sometime between 43, 44, 45 and 47, he moved to Rue du Rhône. But I think when we were in 45, he was most likely in his atelier on the Quai des Berges.
So you guys discovered him, rediscovered him, refounded it.
Mm-hmm.
Please walk us through how you created the inception of the first watch, because you guys make amazing watches, but also calibers. Could you walk us through that process, please, and the evolution of the brand from Genesis?
When we sat together the first time, it was at my home, actually, and we didn't really knew what Harry, who had re-registered the brand, had in mind. I brought in Sebastian, who was a watchmaker. I told him, there is something cooking here. It's interesting. Be ready for any decision to make, you know. And so finally, Harry told us that he had registered the brand and he was looking for some partners. And I would say, okay, great, let's do it. So I said, okay, the first thing is that we've been talking a while. It's late. Let's make a barbecue and then we have dinner and we talk more together. So the idea of sharing was part of that startup concept. Second one, without even knowing what we were doing and the importance of these decisions, we took based on three decisions that were critical for the following 10 years. So they are still critical today. The first one was that we wanted to be true to Chapek. One of the things that I had seen in the luxury industry was a lot of lies, a lot of things that were made up, a lot of things that were without real content. And for me, that was not the idea. The idea is you make a beautiful product with all your heart, with all your spirit, and you should not have to make it nicer by telling a fake story. It should be nice enough by itself that you just tell the story about it. And I felt that even though we knew little about François Chapek at this time, we would discover much more about him. And that would be enough for us to really get into following the legacy of the Spiritus Rector, which was François Chapek. Idea number one, Chapek is alive. He's with us. He's 20 years old, even though he's got 200 years of watchmaking experience, and he wants to make modern watches with us, but watches that belong to his personality and style. Second idea was, and here we were old enough, we were more than 45 when we were with Harry, and we didn't want it to belong to a billionaire. We knew that was the wrong idea. We knew that Chapek would have become the toy of a very rich person, and that it wouldn't be the right approach to make the critical decisions. So we thought, what are we left with? And we thought, wow, we're just three watch lovers, but there are hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe millions of guys like us. Why don't we ask them to join and to become the co-owner of Chapek? And that's the direction we took. That's why we made crowdfunding equity. But crowdfunding equity is modern and not because if you look at business in England 200 years ago, you would realize that some guys were doing the same thing, except that they were in the street trying to find people ready to invest in their companies. So it's just repackaged in a modern way and much easier in the digital world. And you know well, Alan, what the digital world means in terms of making things easier. And the third decision we took was about the collection line. And that's a funny one because while I was unemployed, I was also teaching in different business schools. And I was teaching luxury marketing. And of course, in luxury marketing, you have the example of many brands who have started, you know, with a product at a very high price and then have made a version of this product at a cheaper price to expand the customer base and drive revenues up. And here we decided to do the opposite. And this is probably first lesson that I heard that I had in business by taking this decision with ended up being the right decision without knowing beforehand. So you have to jump in the pool, huh? Which is you should always make things, but according to the context. And you should always revise the book and question the book according to the context in which you are. We were going to be crowdfunded and we felt, okay, the guys who are going to join us as shareholders, they will be watch lovers and they will be advisors. They will be ambassadors, but maybe most important of it, they will be our first customers. So we should make a watch that is rather accessible than uber expensive. And that was the idea behind the Kederberg. So the Kederberg was inspired from a library of watches that we collected from the sales of Chapek watches in Christie's, Sotheby's, Antiquorum. So the brand was not completely dead. The brand was existing for a few thousand fellows, which are the crazy collector of vintage watches. And were very nice people, but they are focused on vintage watches. And so these watches were purchased at very significant prices. And for us, they were representing an incredible source of inspiration and of understanding Chapek through his watches. And that's the exercise we did. We did the same exercise as when we were kids, you know, at school. And in literature, we were asked to understand what the poet tried to say in this poem, you know. And some of us, you know, were really without a word. And some were more creative, imagining a whole story about what the poet wanted to say with this poem. And we did the same exercise by analyzing each watches. And that's how we understood that even though he was making bespoke watches, every bespoke watch was beautiful. Every bespoke watch was Chapek, was sharing some elements of his personality, but also adapted to the client. And this is these elements of personality that we have extracted as a way to design in Chapek. So we have a sort of a design guide, design rule, design direction that we use in Chapek and that we respect and that is coming from this analysis. So that's a little bit the inception of the first watches, you know, to decide to do a 7-day power reserve instead of doing a minute repeater. So to start, I would say, from a simple, relatively easy complication and to grow, you know, with tourbillon, chronograph, etc. And at the same time, to be definitely rooted to Chapek, to continue his legacy and create in a very modern way to get people on board of a starship Chapek that goes into the galaxy of haute horlogerie and make people discover a new planet every other year.
Well, recently, of course, the legacy of Chapek has taken a huge leap forward with the launch of the Chapek Antarctique that came, well, when was it now? A couple of years ago? Feels like a long time. Feels like it's been with us for many years. What has that journey been like? And did you know from the beginning that it was going to change the fortune and exposure of the brand quite as drastically as it did?
No, you never expect times 20 in 18 months. Never. And it's insane. But we did add a hint that this was a direction. And this is coming from making bespoke watches. You know, because, okay, you suffer a lot. It's a lot more work. But you listen carefully to the watch lovers. They became your friends. You know, your clients... Don't try to find clients. Try to make friends. This is really the culture we have in Chapek. So by talking to them, we understood what they were looking for. And we understood what was missing. The customer cannot tell you, you have to make me a watch like that, or your next hit should be a watch like that. But what you can find out when you meet a lot of them, especially in events, by listening to them, you can understand what they are missing, that they are not capable to formulate in a very clear way, and that we could understand. So basically, all these guys were telling me, you know, I collect this kind of watches, this beautiful mechanism, incredible. And I was saying, and during the week, what do you wear? And they were like, no, I work a sport watch, you know, Daily Banger, a brand, XYZ, because it's a Daily Banger. And I don't want anyone to know what I'm wearing. But in fact, it's really far away from what I love, because what I love is haute horlogerie. And I realized that the trend was on sport watches, but that in the real pure sport segment, there were very few models that were driven by haute horlogerie firsthand. So there were more sport models on which you had given a little touch of auto-horlogerie. Here we did the opposite. We took a blank sheet of paper and we started building the movement with a brief that was horological erotism. I want the movement to be like lingerie and I want to make it breathe in a way that you can see nearly everything, but not everything. That's why we talk about erotism. And I want the newbie to be with open eyes like, wow. And I want the collector that is very much aware that he just had a little smile, take the loop and smiles even more. So that was what we were looking for. And this is probably the reason why the watch worked so well.
Rob, we have our soundbite. I love it. Horological eroticism.
Yeah, every time he says that, it does something to me. What can I say? It's risque.
It arouses you, doesn't it?
It arouses me, yeah. I mean, I've got the lingerie on my wrist right now. I'm wearing the SXH5, so I know what he's talking about. It's a constant struggle to keep my cool throughout the day.
On that topic, Xavier, you got me aroused.
Oh, God. Guys, this is all getting a bit too kinky. This is like when we had the Piaget on.
It's okay. We're emancipated men. It's okay. It's okay. It's all about gender fluidity and we can talk about our emotions. Men can cry and we can cry about our watches. All kidding aside, the Antarctique, I loved what you guys did when you started. The Antarctique became indeed a daily beater that caught the attention of many people that maybe don't want dress watches anymore or never wear them. For me, the winner is the Frozen Star. Please talk to us why you guys made a dial of the rarest precious metal in the world. Osmium, and I don't even know if another brand ever did it before, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Actually, some brand did it before, but never the way we did it. And you know, it comes back again to networking. This is a practice you learn to develop when you lose your job. You know, there are always two sides in a coin. And when it's the wrong side, just smile and wait. The coin is going to be flipped again because there's energy on this planet. And this is what makes things move. So I met a friend, a guy that became a friend. And he introduced me to an engineer in Meyrin. Was a strange guy, you know, completely Dr. Tournesol from Tintin, and he was working with osmium, but really nobody was knowing how to use it properly. And the two brands who had done it, you know, did it in a way that was probably as if they were a bit afraid of going strong on the osmium. And that's where, you know, working on beauty from an angle that beauty has a part that is eternal and the part that is ephemeral. And so you always have to redefine the beauty. And today we are in the beauty of 2022. And tomorrow it will be the beauty of 2023. And it will change slightly. So we looked at osmium and we said, yeah, no. It's not the direction to take. The direction to take is to go full osmium, you know. Cover the dial with osmium. Don't hide it. Don't just put a little piece of it, you know. Play the game completely. Jump in the pool. The problem was that, you know, every piece of osmium is extremely expensive and we were too small to be capable to do this dial. So what happened is that we put aside the project for 2 years before we really could move on. And we had the team ready to get together and create a dial that is a very complex dial to execute. Various of our usual dial maker partners have refused to do it, so difficult it is.
Amazing. I love it. It's one of the six platinum families. For those that don't know, I highly recommend to Google the watch. Is it still available or sold out, Xavier?
No, it was sold out very, very fast. Actually, we were sold out in a day. We are going to deliver the pieces by the end of the year, you know, as a little tribute to the 38 crazy persons that have decided to take one and to have it for Christmas.
I mean, it's barely a decision that anyone has to make these days, right? Because the availability of the Antarctique is basically zero right now because you recently closed the order book so you could focus on fulfilling existing orders and increasing production. Can you explain that process of increasing production for the listeners and what you hope the long-term benefits of that will be?
You know, it came as the Antarctique was like a huge wave. And step by step, you realize that a lot of people get attracted, interested into the watch, but you don't realize how big this wave is. And we launched in 2020. And just to give an example to understand what we mean by wave. So we launched Terra Daily in May 26, 2020. We said there are 99 pieces and we want to sell them in 40 days. Okay, in 17 days, we were sold out. And that was the first wave of the pandemic. It was like that. Wow, how is it possible? And we launched the Roaring Forties with the Passage de Drake dial, with this texture. And the Roaring Forties were 40 pieces, so less. But we sold them on December 8, 2020, in 23 hours, 23 minutes. So we said, wow, that's really fast. And then there was the March Mania in March, where people started really looking at us. And in May, we launched the Fratello edition. And the Fratello edition was sold out, correct me, Rob, in 17 minutes or 20 minutes at 6 a.m. It was completely incredible.
One of the greatest moments of my career, to be honest. Obviously, you knew I had faith in the model, and all of us at Fratello did, but we could never have predicted that kind of success. It was just nuts. I mean, 50 pieces in no time at all.
And I could perceive it because by reading the comments in the social network, I could feel the excitement, you know. So you can feel. I mean, I'm convinced that you can feel much more than what you can get with the fifth senses. And here I was feeling that something big is happening. And after that, we had the Rattrapante, which was much more expensive at 50,000. We sold it in less than an hour, 57 or 58 minutes on December 2nd, I think, on September 2nd. And then we have the Monochrome, where it was sold out in less than 2 minutes. And then we were I was in Dubai for Dubai Watch Week. And I was perceiving, you know, the reaction of everyone during Dubai Watch Week. And there are a few interviews where I ask people saying, what does that mean? Does that mean we have to make 1,000 watches? Is that serious? But I was really not realizing that actually 4 months later, we would have a back order of 2,800 watches. It was just the beginning of this wave, you know? So just after it went even more crazy during Christmas, after Christmas in January, we had already a few thousand more. And then during Watches and Wonder, it was just crazy. You don't know what to say. And we said we're not going to close during Watches and Wonder because that would be unfair. We're trying very hard to be fair with everyone. So we said, for the people who came on day one versus the people who will come on day five, we have to be maintaining the same chance for everyone. So we said, okay, we're going to close it after. We like to play low-key. We don't want to attract too much attention. And we are going to close 2-3 days after Watches and Wonder. And that was the case. And the number of pieces we had then was 2,800. And then we knew already we are going to change the size of the company. We had already signed for rent a larger space, but we knew we're going to a much larger number than we were doing before. And after that, from that moment till now, and actually, it's funny, it's a decision I took yesterday, talking to a friend who is also a shareholder in Neuchâtel, having a beer. And now we know where we want to go, and we know why we want to do it and how to do it. So we know we need to increase because there is a demand, and we have to fulfill this demand, and because we have retail partners, and they are our partners since the beginning. For some of them, we want to keep that. It's a question of loyalty. It's not a question of money. The element is we also want to bring more to the industry, to bring more to watchmaking. So we want to develop more complications. And therefore, it's not a race for volume. It's probably our ideal number is 3,500 watches per year. And we'll get there in 2-3 years. But then, what is key is to actually have the time and the dedication and the attention to raising the bar, to effectively exploring new planets into haute horlogerie. So this is direction that we want to give to Chapek.
Amazing, Xavier. Congratulations. I think you are a fantastic and authentic marketeer. I can imagine you had sleepless nights as a marketeer, a manufacturer, a CEO, to close the order book. Because on the short term, I guess, it will create even more demand, fear of missing out. But on the long term, it can also be dangerous, couldn't it? Because the first question for me as a collector is like, darn, I want an Antarctique. But what now? The books are closed. So as a collector, Xavier, I ask you, what next? I want one. What do I do today?
You be patient. We will open the books in Watches and Wonder 2023, as we promised. We don't know how much time it will last, but we will open it for sure. And then, you know, it's not at all a gimmick or a plan. It's a survival. We would have been killed if we had not closed the books. And I know what I'm talking about now, now that I'm a man who will die twice. Really changing, you know, from making 150 to 300. Maybe this year we'll make 450 watches. Next year we will make more than 1,000 watches because now we are full set, fully organized. We have 5 watchmakers, a beautiful team. This is really, the ramp up was extremely difficult. Well, now we are capable to handle that. But if we had not closed the books, we would be with 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. And maybe we would be telling people, you know, we will get your watch in 8 years. And maybe a lot of that people, of these watch lovers, would tell us, you know, cancel my order. Forget it. It's too long. And I would understand. Because me as a CEO, I don't know how to manage a brand where you have to wait 8 years to get a watch. I don't know. Maybe I will know one day and we'll make a new recording. But today, it's very difficult, you know. We've been thinking about what to launch, what new model. You will see there will be a few very nice things during Watches and Wonder, only a few. And we will release them all year long. So we've got maybe 10, 12 novelties next year. And you'll have some in Watches and Wonder, some in May, some in Geneva Watch Days, and some at the end of the year, maybe in New York for the Watch Time New York. So this is going to be the rhythm we are going to follow in terms of releases. But we need to be reduced in volume so that we can deliver in 1 year, 2 years. And we don't want people to wait more than a year to get a Chapek watch. Today, we are incapable to do that. Tomorrow, we think we will be capable. We'll have to keep doors open in a certain limited way. Because if not, we're going to lose our soul making too many watches. And that's not the plan. The plan is to have a beautiful journey. That's a different plan.
That's amazing. I sounded maybe skeptical or critical, which it wasn't. I wanted to provoke you a bit, emulating what consumers think. I, as a marketeer, think it's wonderful the way you guys approach this centuries-old industry, and everything is hidden behind a veil and a curtain and smoke curtains, and there's not a lot of transparency. So from day one, you guys incepted in a crowdfunding manner. Your communication is very open. I think you were the first brand to communicate transparently what's going on with its success, managing expectations. And I believe you were the first, because our friends Tim and Bart Grunefeld, who won a GPHG recently in the chronograph category.
Don't mention that.
No, that's okay.
Why not? Why not? You guys gave them fierce competition.
Yeah.
And they followed your suit. So you guys are trend setting. So I think it's wonderful what you did.
Actually, I have to correct you. They were the first to close their books.
Were they?
We spoke about it with Tim and Bart, who are good friends. And I'm very happy for them that they won the Grand Prix yesterday. Passionate about what they are doing and passionate about watchmaking. And we share the same passion. And they are very cool guys with whom it's very fun to have a beer. So frankly, they would be completely damned to lose them as friends for what happened. It's great. We are here to celebrate the same passion. And yeah, so they did that, I think, about 2 years ago. Or a year and a half ago. And we were speaking and they were telling me, Xavier, you cannot imagine, now we breathe, you know. And before we were under so much stress and so much pressure. And it's the same that is happening here, you know. We've moved from being a company that was basically 4 cats, as we say in Spanish, to become a 15 people company. And yeah, you need some time to be putting together everyone. Training everyone, getting everyone looking at the same thing. Before, I was just like these clowns who are playing music and they play 20 instruments at the same time. And that was me, you know. And now it's not possible anymore. And it's great because it's a much nicer melody to get a lot of people and very good people playing together.
Beautiful metaphor. And besides your transparent marketing, excellent marketing, I also love that you guys are very modern because, as you know, I love technology, digital, and Web3. You were also one of the first to offer blockchain services. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Because we were pushed by survival, you know, that was a reality. Because people, you know, they could look at us and say, it was easy, they had a good name. Let me remind everyone that on March 1916, we went to the first Basel World of our history as a brand, and we sold one watch to one retailer. That's it, you know. So that was the inception. It was not that easy, you know. It was the beginning of the crisis and it was really tough to get there. So that's why we became super crazy about the Web3 and Web2 then, which is use to the maximum what you can do with your own hands and get things started. And then, again, you remember losing your job, networking a lot. Among this networking, I went to a class organized by then what was called CTI, that is today InnoSuisse. It was a class on becoming a startup creating your startup. And there was one guy super friendly, very advanced in his project. And we became friends. And one day, he introduced me to two other guys. And they said, yeah, we've got a project to make become intra-entrepreneur in Helvetia and create a blockchain system for goods that have a high value. And I said, well, that's interesting. That's cool. Tell me the story. And in 1 hour, the deal was made. So again, it's about being open and looking forward. Because for me, I mean, I'm still signing every certificate one by one. And every certificate now has the signature of the watchmaker who made the watch and the controller, Ludivine, who controls each of every watches. It's a handmade process that is very nice and has a lot of value, not only financial value, but emotional value. And that's the most important one for the watch collector who gets the watch in the end. But we felt, wow, that's complex. You know, when people want to send back their watch, if they send back the passport and we have to write on it, we can lose it. This passport should be kept in a safe, naturally. I mean, we should have a system that was much easier. And today we are digital, so we should have a system that is digital. And that was what suddenly the blockchain was offering, which was to have a certificate that could gather all the information that before was on paper and much more information, easier to update online. So we started with them from scratch. We were the most advanced, but a startup. So as every startup, things take twice more time for a company that is established. And while we were having 170 of our first certificates that were digital in a blockchain form on Ethereum, well, the company Adresta got purchased by a famous retailer in Switzerland called Boucherer. And they don't want to continue that project. So we were like, shit, now we are back on ground zero. What do we do? And we have signed recently with a very important partner, which is a consortium. We are going to build up again our blockchain network and our blockchain certificates for all our friends of the Chapek family.
So you've talked about friends and family and the importance of building that wider, very emotionally involved network of people throughout the industry and how that underpins what is very much the special thing about Chapek. And you've had a lot of success collaborating with those friends in the last few years. If you could collaborate, theoretically speaking, with any other watch brand and create like a super watch, which would it be and why?
It would be a mate, it would be a friend first, because it's the whole story. You know, it's a story of friendship. That would be the starting point, the raison d'être, the reason to be. And then to create something that has not been done. So that would be the second raison d'être. And so it's not so much about who's got more muscle in the industry. It's more about sharing a vision and an emotion about watchmaking. That could tell you a few ideas. And then, but the reality is that they recently had a conversation with another brand about that. And it was a random conversation during an event because when they started a year after Chapek, and they asked us a lot of information about how we started. And I gave them a lot of advice, and I had the pleasure to see that they're very good at applying and even improving their advices and successful. So we said, why don't we do a brand together just as a tribute to that sort of friendship and advising and sharing that we had that is very common in the world of the independence, and which is the beauty of it, you know. In independence, everybody is helping everyone. Everybody. Some people are less prone to do that. But there is a majority of people who have helped us a lot. And I want to thank them because and I want to repeat that as much as possible to other people. So that's part of this culture. And that's why when we speak about family, that's also true. And that's also why maybe the Geneva Watch Days are so much fun because you suddenly have 35 CEOs that have to joke with you, regardless of who is around, because it's relaxed and open.
You're absolutely right. It's always a lot of fun to meet up with everybody. And I can't wait again for next year because we always have a riot, don't we? You're not going to tell us which brand it is.
I prefer not because it's the beginning. And it's not done. A lot of things have to be aligned. And maybe it's not the first one with whom we'll do a collaboration. And so, that would be a misstep.
Oh, I'm excited. I like a bit of mystery. Follow-up question. So forget that, because that actually might happen. So we don't want to, you know, ruffle any feathers or speak out of turn there. But what if you could collaborate with a brand outside of the watchmaking industry? What kind of brand do you think has the similar kind of family-oriented values that Chapek has and you might like to work with from an aesthetic perspective?
Good question. You catch me without an answer. It's quite rare.
Yeah, I think that's the first time in having known you for about 8 years that I'm amazed. I'm really sorry.
No, it's because, you know, of course, we need to have, there has to be a common ground. And mechanics is usually the common ground. Even though perhaps I think the question of time is even more important and more interesting to dig into than the question of pure mechanics. But if we talk about mechanics, the world of automotive is living through a lot of changes. There has been a lot of bullshit said by everyone. So I'm not sure I would like to go too fast into that world. And I think there will be a lot of changes in the next 10 years regarding this. I would prefer to fly. And same thing, today we don't have the answer. And even though I do think we'll have some system to be flying alone without like having a car, but just a flying car. This, I think, will happen in 10 years. It's not yet the case. So I'm not sure that would be a serious answer to give that. And I'm not sure that the brand exists today. So maybe that's something to do as a next assignment for my next life, you know?
So the answer is you're going to create a flying car brand that matches perfectly with Chapek's values so you can collaborate with them in the future.
That's like a cadaveric ski, you know, the game of the guys around Dali, you know, when they were starting a sentence with one word and then everyone was adding a word random and the surrealists finishing a sentence that had no meaning. Well, this has been a creative session that was very fun. Thank you, my friend, for that. I feel like I'm in a therapy where suddenly I'm saying things that I didn't plan to say, not at all. And I don't even think I actually formulated them in my brain before we talk. So it's cool. Next question.
Next question, please, Alon. I'll turn it over to you to get us back on track.
It is a fun conversation. And I love the fact how open you are, philosophical, fun-loving. And maybe to make a full circle, because we know you need to jump on another call soon. And I know Rob has one burning question and I'll let him do the outro. To make it full circle, you talked about your walk of life. I would love to hear what your highlight is of your career and what you would want to teach the young listeners amongst our listeners. Because you seem like a mentor and I would love to work, Chapek, just to be around you because I think you're a great mentor.
Well, first I would say to CEOs, because they have a big burden on their back, to take a day off every week in the middle of the week. And we all know what a day off of a CEO is. It means working more far away from the team, letting the team work. And reflecting. And actually, I do that by walking in the Jura, in the mountain behind me. This has proven to be probably the way out from the challenges that I've gone through in 2022, even though they are not finished, but they will never finish. But that's been something really important to go walking for 2 intense hours uphill so that you breathe and you oxygen your brain and you think you can think very well when you walk. You actually have a sharpness of mind and a clear mind like water, you know. So that's probably what I would give as an experience to share, not an advice. I'm not here to pretend to give any advice to anyone, but as an experience that has been very useful. And then to youngsters, I would say, be yourself. Be yourself. Respect people around you. Being yourself should never mean hurting people or going or creating some negative emotions, but be yourself, be creative. Don't try to be what people would like you to be, but be honest with yourself and try to find where you're good at and what you're good at. And that was the chance when I lost my job, you know, I was in despair, you know, after three times losing my job in a row. I was feeling, the syndrome of the imposter, we say, imposter syndrome or something like that. I felt I was really good at nothing. And a friend of mine, Cyril, I remember him. He told me, you know, don't be depressed like that. Just write down the list of your 10 successes tonight, you know, before going to sleep. And then we'll talk again. And I did that exercise and I found out actually that there was 20 successes instead of 10. And I found that these successes had always something in common, that I was good in moments of crisis. I was really good when everything is lost, you know. That's when the little Xavier was capable to come up saying, I got an idea, and to move things. This has been a moment of transformation for me. So when I realized who I was a better me, you know. And I was much more capable actually to handle a CHAPEC, because a startup is really a serial of crisis, you know. A startup is, you wake up in the morning, you're in a prairie, it's beautiful, it's nice. And at the end of the landscape, you see green hills, and that's your paradise. And you walk in that direction, and suddenly you smell burn. You turn around, and there is a huge fire behind you, and the wind is pushing the fire towards you. And that's called a cash burn. And you start running, you know, and you start running with everyone. You hold everyone of the team in your hands, and you start running, you're running. And whatever happens, you know, the wind brings the fire closer to you. And at one point, you have to let go people to run faster. And that's terrible. Say goodbye. I'll take you back. And I did take back some people, actually, which is nice. This is, I would say, this was an experience and a preparation to the challenges of creating a startup. And finally, you know, we could see the wave that we were talking about before, about the Antarctic as being at the bottom of this green hill, where suddenly you get to a different type of landscape and go uphill. Well, the bottom is still very dangerous. We can talk about that. But this was a moment that was very difficult, requiring a lot of resilience. And this is probably the preparation of that has been to actually go through all these big companies and then losing my job. And that was the combination of the two that made the chemistry for doing it.
Brilliant advice. You know, I know you said you didn't want to give advice, but it just sounds like something we could all learn from, especially the first one, to take a day off in the middle of the week. It's very healthy, a very wise idea, I think. Okay, I have one more question, one more, and then we're going to let you go. What would you say if you were approached by a major luxury group like LVMH or the Swatch Group or Richemont or so on, and they wanted to buy CHAPEC? And if you need to, you can swear in your answer. If you swear a lot, I might have to beep it out. But, you know, what would your response be if they came knocking and tried to buy you now?
I would say, you know, you have to. I have an answer, but let me explain that answer before I give it to avoid shocking people around. When we started, the first round of investors were families and friends and fools. The fools are maybe the most important guys. And these guys who put 100,000 of dollar, and the family who put families and friends put up to 80,000. So it was a lot of money, you know. They were asking, you know, for how long do you think this money will be there, you know? And we said, look, we cannot promise anything. We're going to try to find a way for you to exit in between 5 to 10 years from now. And that's, you know, it's a human and moral commitment, because you understand, you know, that's a lot of money. They want their money back. And that's normal, because at one point people want to change the structure of their assets or simply buy a house because they are getting old and they want to move somewhere else. So it was always in our mind that we would have an exit. And then we had a dream, which was that this exit would be by becoming publicly traded, so that everyone could decide on any day, at every minute, that they would like to sell their shares and redeem the value created. In theory, my answer would be, how much? And I got a call recently and I answered, how much? Just to test the guy. Also to know why, you know? Okay, so they didn't want it to answer. I said, okay, look, if you answer that, and what is a very high number, I would, and I knew they were not having that number in mind. I told them, I would be crazy to sell because I'm going for a much higher valuation. And my plan is to bring CHAPEC at a much higher value as a beautiful company. It's not about money. It's about the recognition of the work that has been done and of the creation that were made. And so today we have put in place a system where people can actually sell their shares at least once a year, usually twice a year. So we're not traded, publicly traded. There are so many people willing to buy some shares that they can buy the ones of the shareholders of the first days who from time to time ask me, and I can't say my shares. So we've got a solution. Yeah, I still keep the dream, you know, of thinking of a Chapek that can welcome anyone on board, you know. So being publicly traded would be a nice exit. But I'm not the only one. I'm one of 200. And I respect and I defend and I protect everyone of these shareholders. So it's not relevant how much they own, but it's relevant that they exist and that they made the dream possible. So if we, if some of them want to sell, and if 51% of them one day decide they want to sell, well, let's be it, you know. It's also part of the deal, which is to accept what we have been doing as a journey and to accept that this journey might have some changes that not necessarily means a change in direction, but that can mean a change in ownership. It's a possibility. It's an obvious possibility for every company, everywhere, every brand.
Xavier, please, 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 I want to buy one of these certificates. So bring me in contact in this annual sale because I missed the first round, the schmuck that I am 9 years ago. Very interesting what you said about this democratic way and thinking of shares listed publicly. Have you considered merging that idea with blockchain to create a kind of ICO where you don't need to go to a exchange that is governed so much?
I've seen that this existed and I've looked at it like many other things in the technological world where I thought, let's keep an eye on it. And in 3 years, we'll see what chunk of it will have survived, you know. I remember that when virtual reality came out, some people said the stores of tomorrow will be made of that virtual reality. And today we do use virtual reality, but in very precise occasions, and that's helpful, but it's limited. So it's the same thing. For me, it's too early to say it's a direction. We need to be prudent. Even though we are very modern as a startup that is now becoming a young company, we cannot jump on every new idea like that, you know. For the blockchain, we were the first client of this startup, Adresta. So we were really working hand in hand. And we knew we were controlling what they were doing and what we were doing. So it's a little bit too early yet to go there. But it's an option that we look at.
What exciting possibility to have that in the future. And well, let's face it, everything that lays ahead of Chapek now is exciting beyond compare. It's been a wonderful journey so far. And before the company even celebrates its 10th anniversary since refoundation, it must be very satisfying and very thrilling, as has this podcast been for us. So thank you for joining us, Xavier. And we hope we'll get you back on the airwaves soon for another round of questions, because I know for a fact that I have another hour's worth at least to ask you already. And I'm sure Alon's mind is buzzing with similar new questions to ask you. If our listeners have any questions, then they can get in touch with us directly. You can either contact me on Instagram at Rob Nudds, that's R-O-B-N-U-D-D-S, or Alon at Alon Ben Joseph, that's A-L-O-N-B-E-N-J-O-S-E-P-H. Or you can send either of us a direct email at either rob@therealtime.show or alon@therealtime.show. We'll be back next week answering more of your questions and welcoming another guest to the studio. Until then, stay safe and keep on ticking.